we create a certain life and we feel very secured in it. And there is that illusion of control because, you know, nothing is really under our control anyway. But we create a life in which there is that illusion of control, illusion of, oh, we know how to navigate this. We've created something and we want to kind of lean into that and feel safe. And so, again, bringing that inquiry into the spiritual practice or the practice of meditation is really learning in our own internal experience that we are always safe. There is always that sense of security within ourselves that we can lean into. And I think that's very important because then you know that you bring this wherever you go. You bring this in whichever new endeavor or new adventure you start. It's not external. That sense of security and safety is now inside of you.
Hey, voll schön, dass du reinhörst. Wir sind Jovan und Philipp und das ist ein Pott Kaffee. Alle zwei Wochen quatschen wir hier mit Menschen, die uns inspirieren. Wir sprechen mit ihnen über ihr Leben, was sie unterwegs gelernt und vielleicht auch wieder verworfen haben. Was ihr Handeln leitet und woher diese Überzeugung kommt. Immer persönlich, gelegentlich lustig, manchmal ein bisschen verkopft, aber stets ehrlich und von Herzen. Und jetzt ganz viel Spaß mit der neuen Folge. Hello.
Mic check, mic check, 1, 2.
We are already on recording, Philipp.
Oh, sorry.
It's the last episode of the season. Behave, please.
Okay, all serious now. Hello and welcome to the last episode of Ein Pott Kaffee. Who are we talking to today, Tjaden?
We are talking to Arjuna and Apita, who are yoga teachers. I actually don't know them, but Fenya got to know them this summer as she did her 5-week yoga teacher training with them in Tuscany, in Italy. When she came back after those 5 weeks, because we had barely been in touch, I could tell how deeply it touched her and how influenced she was by everything she had experienced there. So it got me curious to maybe talk to them as well, to learn who they are and what they do. And I guess they have a very interesting story because they also have been like brought up in this, let's say, Western world, but then at some point decided to embark on a more spiritual journey, and they have built an ashram before in Guatemala, but then some years ago came to Italy and are very much on the spiritual journey, I would say.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to talking to them because for once, as you said, I also could really tell that Fenya made quite a remarkable, I don't want to use that word, transformation, it's so, but she really seemed different than when she left, and that was really impressive, I thought. And at the same time, I've recently been starting to read a lot of thoughts by some of the spiritual teachers, or however you might want to call them, and I'm curious to get to some answers, hopefully, or some more questions, we'll see.
Then hello and welcome to a new episode of Ein Pott Kaffee, today with Apita and Arjuna. Thank you so much for taking the time for us.
Great to be here. Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
We wanted to start this interview with sharing like a dream of maybe Philip, Fenya and I, in order to learn something from one, I assume one of the dreams that the two of you fulfilled. We have the idea, or we've had this idea of buying a house somewhere on the countryside for quite some time now and turning it into a place where we can live and where we can work and be creative. But every time we talk about it, there's all those fears of financial insecurity, of fear of failure, if we're actually able to make a living out of it, of lack of knowledge. So all those things, I would say, keep us from really considering it at the moment. And on the contrary, so to say, I understand that the two of you met in 2011, you fell in love, you married, and then moved to Guatemala and eventually built your first ashram there. But initially, you got there with nothing more than $500 and started making money by baking bread and giving massages to people. And I'm wondering, how could you be so confident that everything would work out? And did you even have the ashram in mind when going there?
Well, we did have it in mind. In fact, for many years, probably more than 10 years, we had a pretty similar idea to what you described, going somewhere. Originally, I think the idea was more about community, really. We both came out of kind of the hippie traveler background and wanted to live with people in nature, you know, but actually a lot of people we meet also in the yoga scene agree with, right? And it kind of moved gradually after making some community experiences and recognizing that community living isn't as easy as it sounds. We kind of shifted towards a vision of more of an eco village. And then when we actually met, it had shifted again because yoga had come into the picture. So that was in the last few years before we met, we were pretty deeply in yoga, and then basically a yoga village of sorts, or a yoga community, a yoga ashram, I guess, was the latest iteration of this kind of vision. And then starting it was easier simply because of two things. One is we were at the right place at the right time. So there was some luck involved. This was not planned. We simply got to Guatemala at the right moment, where there were already some places there attracting backpackers, where there was a vacuum for some more proper yoga that we offered. And secondly, we didn't have the funds, but we rented a place. And so the risk was very minimal. And so we were able to set up with a minimal investment. And within, I think, a week, we gave the first class. The only issue was there were no people around, which was because it was rainy season. So we had actually arrived in rainy season. The main season was just over. And that allowed us to rent the place. It became available because the main season was over. And so that was also not really planned. But the availability of the place, the affordability of it, because it was rented from a local person, and then the ability to get started very quickly and just make it work with a number of, with basically all our skills. We enlisted all the skills we had, and that was just about enough to make the rent. I think it took about a month until we managed to make the rent. And so, yeah, it was certainly a few lucky things coming together. But at the same time, most people don't start with $500, right? So if you have saved up a little more than that, you have a much bigger cushion. But I think the number one key that I would advise to anyone to start something like this is to minimize costs. I always see in other projects that we come across that there is a tendency to have very big expenses, be it in the purchase or taking out loans and then the follow-up costs of that, or be it whatever renovations are undertaken. People seem to have a tendency to spend much more in the beginning than is necessary, and then they end up either needing a lot of capital or having a lot of debt, both of course being an issue.
And if I can kind of pick up into the energetics of your question, as I hear your question, then my question is, why not? You know, I see so many people, we work with people for so many years, and so people come to us with their visions and dreams and all the reasons why they cannot do what they want to do. And my question really is, why not? What is actually stopping you? Because it's not the money, it's not the logistics. What is on the bottom? What is on the bottom of that fear or discomfort or contraction that is telling you you cannot actually do what you want to do? And I feel within our relationship, this has been just kind of an incredible dynamic and mirror, because one of us would say, let's do this. And it can be a really big idea or a big vision. And then the other one will say, why not? Let's do it. And it can be something small in our day-to-day life, or it can be, let's move from Guatemala to Europe and change our life completely. And then the other person will just look and say, okay, let's do that. So I feel this question for me kind of reflects this big disconnect or this big wound we have in the West, that wound of separating kind of our very logical, brainy understanding of the world and our felt sense in the body. And so when we bridge these two, when we actually are in the present moment, when we actually are right there with our vision and with the people that we want to turn this vision into reality with, and we feel into our being, we feel into our body, and our mind can really drop into the heart, there is that trust that, of course, if this vision comes from the heart, if it comes from a sincere place, if it is in alignment, if that's something that you would consider, then why wouldn't that vision come into reality? Why wouldn't we trust what our heart actually wants?
There's basically a moment of maturity, and it can take a while, right? So if we try to align everything with the practical advice that I started with, it can still be very forced. Ultimately, it has to be the right moment for it. And there's nothing much we can do about this, right? We always say that we didn't actually do anything. Guatemala kind of attracted us and made us do it. It felt really more like a surrendering and an allowing than making choices, taking actions. And see, these things from the outside, you know, sure, you do one thing after the other, but the question is really, are you in alignment with what needs to be done right now? Or are you trying to force something that you got into your mind to be a good idea, or yeah, the way things are supposed to be?
I feel, and Fenya already told me that, and what I also can hear from this answer is that this concept of intuition is something that has been very important to the two of you, and somehow something like a North Star in life, so to say. And I also feel like I'm intuitive, but I would say rather when it comes to spontaneous everyday life situations, like be it but while playing basketball, for example, I feel very intuitive, or when I've lost orientation and need to decide whether turning left or right, those small moments. But whenever it comes to like long time decisions, I tend to be more rational, because I feel like the time I have to think about the potential complexity of those decisions starts a debate in my head of all the pros and cons and eventualities. And although I feel the beauty and the power of intuition, I find it hard to be in touch with it consciously. So I'm wondering what you would say, how we are able to get in touch with it and also separate it from our rationality or our inner voice of reason.
Well, if I hear correctly what you're saying, the examples you gave that are situations you follow your intuition in, like playing basketball or turning left or right, these are situations which are first very fast moving situations in which you are in your body, right? You're like in presence. When you play basketball or when you do sports, very often you don't have time to get into your head, right? It's like right there. It's in the present moment. There is no time for like the mind and all the pros and cons to hijack the moment. It's right there in your body. And then your intuition is really your felt sense in this situation, right? And so I really like to link this with meditation. As we practice meditation, what we practice is to be in the present moment, not necessarily in our mind, but also in our body, in the wholeness of our being. And this is actually what makes us more available and turns being intuitive into almost like a learned skill of being present right here, right now, with, yes, your mind, but also with your felt sense in the body. So then you can expand these moments that are initially very brief, from having intuition when you play basketball to being able to drop into that intuitive presence when you make big decisions. And of course, being rational and weighing the pros and cons is important, but also tracking the felt sense in the body and learning to listen what your body knowledge is actually telling you right now. For me, this is a very important bridge to be able to make intuitive decisions and bigger intuitive decisions.
I think for me, it's also when I look at my and also Tjörven's life, we are very, I feel like, deeply entrenched into this traditional path of we both are in somewhat stable jobs. We've built a lot here. And always when I think about this dream, it also means like sort of not really giving up all of it, but risking all of this. And I see, if I think about that and if I say it, that it's a weird thing to cling on to, but still it has so much power, I feel. And I'm wondering, because you just said that you came from this hippie world traveler life, if you think that that is an important step to sort of get rid of all of this first before you truly find what you, or find the courage to do such things actually.
Yeah, the later you take such steps, the harder it will be, because of course you're much more entrenched in life, right? And I never really got so deeply established. In uni, I was pulled out of this trajectory of, you know, education, job, family, by having to do the civil service. At the time, we still had to do the service. I didn't go to the army, but I did some service at some hospital for a year. And during that time, I started traveling across Europe whenever I could and came in touch with basically the backpacker lifestyle and realized, I haven't seen the world. Will I go back to all these books, or perhaps I'll look at the world first and then we see what books to read, right? So there was much greater opportunity at such an early stage to break out. There wasn't much to break out of. So eventually, of course, the service finished and the next day I was gone and I haven't really looked back ever since. So for anyone who is more established in especially these really strong bonds, be it jobs, be it family, there is usually a very strong threshold needed, like a momentum, either because the status quo is just very difficult, right? A certain degree of suffering is what brings people to make change, or, which brings us back to intuition, a sense of completeness. There can be a moment when we feel, oh, whatever I've done so far, it's been enough, be it in a job or be it whatever it is. There can be suddenly a moment of time to move on, a feeling of having to change. And sometimes it's far from defined, right? But we've heard this from many people that we talk to in our years of traveling and living in different places, that sometimes there's just this necessity of doing something else, either due to suffering or just due to some other intuition of the need to move on.
Well, I don't think there is one recipe that fits all, right? This is our story. This is how things turned out for us. And for me, it was a little different. I was always with one foot in the nomadic lifestyle and with one foot in like finishing university and getting into a master's program and working for an NGO and all this. So I was kind of in between. But also I'm just contemplating on what you were saying, that, you know, the being established in the job and in your current life is such a difficult thing to let go of, or there is that sense of perhaps losing what you've created already. And for me, that's really bringing up the topic of safety or security, right? We create a certain life and we feel very secured in it. And there is that illusion of control because, you know, nothing is really under our control anyway. But we create a life in which there is that illusion of control, illusion of, oh, we know how to navigate this. We've created something and we want to kind of lean into that and feel safe. And so again, bringing that inquiry into the spiritual practice or the practice of meditation is really learning in our own internal experience that we are always safe. There is always that sense of security within ourselves that we can lean into. And I think that's very important, because then you know that you bring this wherever you go. You bring this in whichever new endeavor or new adventure you start. It's not external. That sense of security and safety is now inside of you. It's your inner experience.
Yeah, I actually think that also, reflecting over the last few years, the way I've been brought up and the way I also lived has a lot to do with security. And I see that both in, as you said, how I've probably built my life, how I also probably partly live my relationships. And sometimes I wonder how to differentiate that actually from other things, like, how do you see I'm doing that now out of security and I'm doing that for another reason?
Well, that's why I said that it is so very individual for every one of us, right? I mean, of course, we can try to line out like a recipe or some kind of plan or strategy, but it comes down to consistently being boldly honest with ourselves and consistently learning about ourselves. And there are many different modalities that can do that can support us in doing that. But it comes down to inquiring all the time and noting and knowing ourselves and our responses in different situations, and pausing and again looking into, oh, am I reacting in this way because of this or because of that reason? What is actually moving me right now in this situation?
It may seem that we have to make decisions, right? Life seems to be this long string of decisions, and there's even something called decision fatigue nowadays, right? People actually have to take a time out. They experience burnout because of all the decisions we have to take, and this can be particularly bad in the professional life. But interestingly, in spirituality, a very unexpected phenomenon is that the deeper we go, the more we realize that decisions are not really required or even possible, which is a pretty hard concept to relate to. But from experience, I can say that at first it seems we make decisions. We weigh our options, we go through life one thing after the other, we perhaps struggle with decisions, we regret them, or we have hopes and dreams. But then over years of any practice, and really it doesn't even matter what it is, because all practices do the same thing of expanding awareness. So through more awareness, we realize gradually that the decisions are not, they're just on the surface. And underneath, something unfolds. It's more like that. And so with awareness, we actually recognize that we just need to unfold. Like sometimes the analogy of a flower is given. If you find like a bud on a plant, it doesn't help to go and open that bud with your fingers, right? And unfold the flower because you want to see how beautiful it is. There's just no point, right? This would be the attitude of effort or decision making. Rather, you let the flower open naturally, which will be perfect and happen at the perfect time and bring about the greatest beauty. There's no decision involved. The plant does not decide. It doesn't make a choice, right? There's just something naturally unfolding. And so this is, I think, more a listening than a directing or taking charge.
And of course, creating the right conditions, both for a plant and for a human being to come back to their felt sense of who they are and what this life is about.
I feel like in this context, what really seems logic in a way is that you often describe the cyclical nature of life, meaning that evolution and also enlightenment come in a cyclical way, meaning that throughout our life there's those same patterns or even situations that we come back to, but in the evolution of growth we have the chance to see them differently than we might have been before. That also I feel like takes out the importance of decisions a bit, if we have the feeling that we nonetheless come back to the same patterns anyway. Are there identifiable moments within your lives where you became aware of your own growth?
For me, that was the first Vipassana retreat I set. And for the ones that don't know Vipassana, it's like a Theravada Buddhist meditation boot camp, in which you usually sit 10-day retreats and you sit for 11 hours per day in meditation, and it's really quite strict. And it was a really breaking point for me, sitting that first retreat when I was 20 years old and sitting there, having really the most powerful experience of presence in my life and thinking, why would I do anything else? Like, if I can do this with my life, if I can actually sit with people in presence, in awareness, cultivating more of that and supporting others in doing so, why would I do anything else? And so for me, that was a very, very powerful and important breaking point.
I guess for me, apart from having a similar story to tell, sitting Vipassana at age 20 and finding that very ground shifting, I would also mention traveling as such. I've often suggested to people to go traveling, especially when they don't know what to do, when they like lack vision or inspiration, right? Or even just momentum to make changes, right? Because traveling, of course, like, it's especially in India, but also in other places, you notice that you don't travel so much as the world travels you. And that really has some very interesting effects on our psyche, on breaking open the patterns that you mentioned, because it is quite shocking to realize and to admit eventually how much of our life, of our experience, is actually governed by mental structures, by patterns that we've acquired while growing up, that might even be older if you consider the karmic roots of that yoga teaches about. And those patterns define the way we think. They define every thought, every word, every action, every decision, and we are literally bound by them. And that, I think, is in large part where the notion of liberation comes from in spiritual traditions. So to break free, it can be interpreted in many ways. But one of them, and I think a major one, is to break free from those patterns, from those expectations, from the dogmas, beliefs that we hold and that shape who we are, or that who we think we are, actually. And so when traveling, much of that is being unearthed, confronted, brought to awareness. We experience how people live completely different lives, having completely different mindsets and experiences, coming to different conclusions, but finding that world and that experience just as natural and normal as we find ours. And so we basically move away from seeing our own perspective as the only one, which is otherwise tempting to do, where we would always just question why not everybody lives the way we do, right? And when traveling, we realize, oh, we're so silly. So I think it makes a big difference, especially if you spend like 6 months, a year or longer on the road. It changes our mental patterns and structures so profoundly, and we don't even have to actively do anything. It can really make all the difference.
When you talk about patterns, what immediately comes to my mind is, I think the notion or the pattern of progress, because that's something I feel is in my life or in our life a very present thing, that I go and study to do a certain job. I go to work out because I want to look like that. And I feel like what I see myself and also what I see around me here in Berlin a lot is that this pattern of progress gets put on all these spiritual practices as well. It's like I meditate to calm my mind. I do yoga to connect my body to my breath. And I wonder what's the difference between progress in the worldly life and the spiritual life, or is there any, or how do we break free of that?
That is a really great question, because it seems like our culture, Western culture, nowadays is really goal-oriented, right? There is always an agenda. There is always a goal. There is always a destination. We do something because we want this result or some kind of result or some kind of response. And that's why before we started this conversation, I said that we just come with open presence today, because even when we come into a conversation with someone, into sharing space with someone, there is usually an agenda, right? The mind tells us, okay, now I'm going to talk to this person and I'm going to try to get this outcome of this situation, of this conversation. There is always that goal-orientedness to get something out of something, to reach a certain result. And that's not really helpful. If we want to really be genuinely present in our life and with the people around us and every situation, it's not really helpful to have an agenda or a desire for a particular outcome. And of course, we translate these patterns on our spiritual practice, right? That's completely natural. That's what happens. We have some kind of mental fluctuations, contractions, and habitualnesses of the mind, and we absolutely now translate those onto our spiritual practice. So that is not really a big surprise there.
Also, what comes to mind is we have a notion of progress, as you say, that applies in the unreal world, as we like to call it, the outside world, the worldly environment, and we transport that notion to spirituality, where it actually has no business being applied. It's such a huge departure from how life usually works. It may take a while to even realize this. Like one of our teachers, he actually, controversially you could say, he's quoted teaching, the way you feel is no indication of your spiritual progress. And it may be a while before we can fully appreciate what he's describing there. Because often we do things, be it in life or in spirituality, to feel better. And we can't blame anyone for this. Naturally, we all want to feel good. We want to feel happy. So whatever we do is supposed to make us feel better. Nonetheless, in spirituality, that doesn't really apply. It doesn't work that way, right? So when we go to yoga class, of course, we start off by hoping to feel better afterwards. And the same would apply to meditation, even though it will be a while perhaps before we actually feel better afterwards, depending on how long we sit and what else we've done before, perhaps. But the point is, if we are getting into spiritual practice, hoping to feel better afterwards than before, we are missing the point. It's really not about changing the way we feel, but rather observing the way we feel and learning about ourselves, coming closer to our essence through that observation, through that awareness. And that can sometimes mean that we don't feel better at all. And yet, it's amazing progress, because for once we've actually allowed ourselves to fully feel what's going on. And perhaps that reveals to us why we feel that way. What is going on? How have we perhaps been ignoring our calling or our intuition, or how have we been misaligned, you could say, with that flow of life? Like it's like a river in a way, right? The river analogy is very common also in Eastern traditions, where we see life as a river that we can either fight against. Trying to fight the river is usually pretty pointless, right? Or we can let that river carry us, which of course will take us to the sea, And merging with the sea is a common analogy for liberation, for enlightenment as well. So that river picture is really quite useful when it comes to life. And this doesn't mean, it's often misunderstood as a passivity or as a laziness almost. It doesn't mean at all that we don't do anything, right? But rather that the activities we engage in while floating on the river, they come naturally. And when we recognize that and surrender to that, then there is progress. And not really before.
Do you sometimes still feel like there is some parts within you that want to do those easy conclusions, those setting goals? Like maybe, I don't know how you have been brought up, but I feel like the things that Philip also just mentioned, that might be something that is very deep within our current way of life. Do you feel like you were able to let go of all this, or are those still things you actively have to remind yourself of, not putting too much importance and focus on it?
Of course we do. Of course we have to remind ourselves like anybody else. It is not, we actually often start also our courses by saying we are not some perfected being, some gurus of the universe that have figured it all out. Not at all. We often have to remind ourselves. We go through good days and bad days, emotions coming, and you know how it is with emotions. Sometimes they just sweep you off your feet and you have to get your bearings again. So of course, absolutely, a constant kind of practice of reminding ourselves is going to stay with us. And this is another, I guess, common misconception about spirituality, that we practice a little bit of this, a little bit of that, and then we'll be perfectly happy forever after. And the reality is not like this. There's always challenges. There's moments when we forget connection and fall back into separation. Of course there is. And it goes in and out, up and down, all around. But this is actually a good way of explaining and understanding meditation as well, right? Often it is, the impression is given that meditation means you have to calm your mind, you have to calm your body, and there's this active effort to reach this physical and mental stillness. And you can try this for decades with very limited benefit. There is some benefit, which gives us the impression that we're doing it right. And so we can become like really professional at this. We can actually do make progress. Like we can learn to sit really still. We can even learn to calm the mind. But we would be mistaken if we thought that this is meditation, right? Rather, it is the acceptance of whatever is, that we actually rest in the reality of this moment. And that can very well be challenging, unpleasant. It's only that you don't fight it necessarily. You don't find fault with it or try to change constantly for something else. This is really the essence of spirituality, as far as I've found it. And I'm sure there's other perspectives, but to recognize that arriving in what is really the ultimate realization. And it's very hard to put this into clearer words. But it's a lot about listening, looking, and resting.
I have a lot of questions or things popping into my head from what you just said. But yeah, I think I'll like, or two things maybe. First would be, there is this, you said this notion of a river where the goal is maybe to become part of the river. Not the goal, I said that word again. but then there's also this other river that we talked about, which is trying to get security and like just clinging to what we already have. And doesn't it take a lot of effort to go from that one river into the other one? And isn't Jovan and I talked a lot about the concept of discipline Like, isn't it, do it not need a lot of discipline and effort to sit for every day or to do, to practice every day? And how is that compatible with this notion of the spiritual river? That's what I'm wondering. Maybe we go into that first.
When you ask if it takes a lot of effort or if it's very difficult to switch from the river of security and safety to the river of surrendering to life, then my question is, how much effort does it take to continue to clinging to safety and control? And that's for every one of us to intimately inquire with our own heart. How much effort does it take me to keep pretending I can control this situation? How much effort does it actually take me to my mind, heart, body, spirit, to actually cling to that safety I've created, feeling that this is so precious that I cannot really let it go, right? And then again, we come back to that felt sense in the body. And I kind of keep bringing us back to this because what I see in the world we live in the people we work with, is really this disconnect with the body, which eventually creates illness of some kind. It creates dis-ease in the body in some way, in some kind, at some point, because there is a constant tension running through our system, through our body system all the time. That tension of reaching the goal, that tension of keeping it all together, that tension of keeping the safety that we've created. Like, it's in the body, it's in our system. It's that constant, perhaps slight contraction that is always there somewhere on the background, that inability to fully drop in and relax in this moment, exactly as it is, with the complete acknowledgement that this moment is actually a mystery. If we let go of the control that the mind wants to cling to, there is nothing we actually know about this moment. We can only show up for it with everything we've got, right? So when there is that question of how hard is it to drop in and surrender, then I feel it's in order to investigate how hard it actually is to continue to cling.
It's like, remember when you ride a roller coaster? It might have been a while, right? It's kind of life in a nutshell. Okay, you get into it and it's all okay so far. And perhaps you feel a little apprehensive, but you just do it anyways. And then it kind of builds up gradually. And there's this moment when you kind of drop from the cliff and you really feel like you die or something. And you have the choice to try and resist, to fight, which is utterly pointless, of course. And the only way to actually enjoy the roller coaster is to relax. And it may be a while before we can do this. But then, and only then, will we appreciate the experience of a roller coaster. As long as we fight it, there is no way out. There is no fight to be won. It is utterly pointless to even try. But when we manage to let go enough, when we somehow have the trust to, okay, this roller coaster was made in Germany, it's not going to kill me, it has passed all its certifications, right? It better not be a roller coaster in India, you should see those. So if we can trust enough to relax into the roller coaster, it's an amazing experience, but not until then.
And I would like to pick up on your question about discipline. Like, what is the importance of discipline? And I think often when people come and study with us, being that yoga or meditation, they're a little surprised how much discipline we actually imply into the spaces we hold. And discipline is very important and necessary at the beginning. Effort is very important and necessary in the beginning. Then eventually they become so natural that they're almost impossible to impose anymore, because it's not about making ourselves sit every day for 1 hour. Eventually, there's just the naturalness of course, I am sitting in presence for this much time per day. Of course, I'm doing this practice because I immediately see the benefits in my day-to-day life, in my relations, in the way I am. So yes, in the beginning, discipline and effort is necessary because we have already created a lot of different mental patterns that perhaps are not as beneficial in the moment. So if you want to kind of gently move ourselves into a different way of being, then yes, we have to imply some discipline until it is embodied and habituated. So it's not a question anymore, do I want to eat an unhealthy piece of food or I want to eat a fruit? Because of course I'm gonna eat a fruit. If that makes sense, just a tiny example. Because I know a lot of people struggle, especially with the entire what to eat, what not to eat, diet and healthy lifestyle situation.
But maybe to follow up on that discipline, what I'm wondering is how do I differentiate the feeling that comes from that practice with the feeling that comes from rather traditional conditioning that appears naturally? Because isn't it a form of conditioning also I imply on myself if I force myself, paraphrasing, in to sit every day for an hour?
It's quite important to be aware of this. It's very true. When we learn a certain technique, any technique really, there is the risk of getting stuck with that technique. And at first we see that to be necessary, calling it discipline. Yeah? Even most teachers would begin by teaching us a certain amount of discipline. But later on, it is very important to break free from the technique, from the discipline, and to develop a certain naturalness with the practice and with life. And thankfully, for most of us, that happens naturally. You see, talking about it is a bit like reading a book about it is not good enough, right? The practice itself is the only thing that can really make a difference. And thankfully, most practices are well established and ancient because they have passed the test of time, that they naturally dissolve, that they somehow allow us to break free from them. And that doesn't go for every single person in every single case, because some people have a pattern of holding on to anything and everything quite automatically. And so it can become a problem that our discipline actually turns into rigidity and attachment and even addiction. And we think we meditate every day, but in actual fact, we're just clinging to a certain pattern and rhythm when actual meditation doesn't take place. And to what that even means, it'd be a while to describe or understand meditation, but the point really is that all techniques have to dissolve eventually. And meditation is not a technique, right? All the techniques we use, they only have the purpose of creating conditions for meditation. And when I say meditation, I include things like yoga in this or Tai Chi. Virtually all spiritual techniques are forms of meditation. And they're designed to bring us from the mind beyond the mind. But that is a process that is different for every person. It is usually slow. It can go wrong a million ways, which is why we need a teacher and we need patience. But the biggest problem is we have to actually do it.
Yeah, I feel like it's so interesting to see how cool, calm, and collected you are, and I really admire that. And I think it's something I'm very much drawn to because I feel like I tend to get stressed out easily in life, or there are just certain situations in life that trigger me easily. And in those moments, it's super hard for me to detach myself from from the inflow of emotions, and then I just get moody and just less balanced than I would wish for in my life. And I heard that, Peter, during the summer retreat that Fenya also attended, you said that you never saw Arjuna stressing out, which is a very remarkable thing to say about another person, I feel like. Although you already admitted that not everything is, that you are not perfect. So I was wondering if there's something, if that already came quite natural to you in your lives, or that is something that you now experience within your spiritual journey.
I'm a fiery type. I get worked up, I get angry like the next person. So if I don't freak out during, a teacher training anymore, it may have something to do with the fact that we've done it a few times. We kind of have seen the process unfolding and we have relaxed into it. And if you're familiar with something, it's less likely to freak you out. The goal is not to become, you know, utterly and eternally calm. It's not that you need to... Of course, that sounds nice, but I can promise you I'm far from always balanced and calm. Not at all. I actually have a fiery nature. Like, my constitution is a fiery one, and I easily flare up. I also simmer down again quite quickly, right? Other people might have an airy or an earthy nature, and then things are very different. But those constitutions, as we call them, doshas in Ayurveda, they don't go away, right? They stay with us. And that is also why different teachers come across very differently, teach very differently. And we may like it or not, right? But ultimately we end up with the teacher that we, how do they say, when the student is ready, the teacher appears. So we end up with whoever resonates for us. And for better or worse, we may go through a series of teachers that basically catch different stages of ourselves. And most of the teachers I've seen are also not eternally calm and composed. And it's often a roller coaster of emotions, of experiences that might get moderated. It might get cleaned up for especially teaching situations, right? They say don't meet your teachers or don't meet your heroes, because we sometimes just have a cleaned up image from some kind of public exposure of people, and that doesn't tell us really who they are or what they look like at their worst, right? So it's not like that. It's not that we had some great head start or that we've been absolutely a huge mess and then we've somehow became calm or anything like that. Nothing like that. It really doesn't matter where we start from, and we will find that even after 10 years or 20 years of practice, we still go through ups and downs and turbulence. The difference is how we deal with it, right? To really, how quickly do we come back to looking and listening? And that is something that discipline and practice helps with. If you sit down every day for an hour, reminding yourself with one technique or the other, to look and listen over and over, it becomes a natural skill. And then in everyday life, when turbulence strikes, sooner and sooner will you remember to look and listen instead of being blown off course, being upset, right? So what happens, I can say from experience, is that we come back together more quickly. We remember the river, the storm, the roller coaster, whatever you want to call it, the stage, right? Whichever way whatever image we want to employ, but we remember more quickly that everything is really just weather. It's really like weather. And as they say, you should only ever, what was it? Praise the weather or ignore it. Anything else makes no sense.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with what Arjuna was saying, that with practice, things do change. And it's not like you become this perfect, unperturbable human being, but you actually are just really more skillful at witnessing yourself. And this is something that we speak of a lot, especially during meditation retreats, because yes, there is the challenge of sitting still for many hours per day. And sometimes it seems the objective is really just to sit still in this particular meditative environment, but it isn't. The purpose of spiritual practice of any kind, of mindfulness practice of any kind, isn't for this practice to stay on your cushion and to stay on your mat. The purpose is to actually bring this practice into your day-to-day life, into every situation, every conflict, every conversation, and be able to really observe more closely how we habitually react to everything that comes our way. And then being able to have a choice. Do I actually want to react in this way I've always reacted? Or do I want to perhaps change that in some way? Is there a better way for me, for the others, for this planet to respond to this situation? So in this perspective or context, having an established meditative practice simply gives us more freedom of choice in every situation of our lives. We actually are more masterful in our interactions, both with ourselves, each other, and our environment.
As much as I would love to cling on to this conversation and make it go longer and ask more questions, I feel like maybe it's a good time to let go. And thank you for all your thoughts and your time.
Thank you for having us and for this wonderful conversation.
Well, that was one heck of a roller coaster ride.
Amazing joke, John. Still, it's not really over. The last question of the season. Maybe the last question ever.
Don't be so dramatic.
I love being dramatic. It's, what is your intuition telling you most presently right now? I don't know if that's correct English, but you get the question, no?
Entschuldigung, ich war jetzt hier mit dir gewesen jetzt? Ich würde nämlich denn jetzt ja zahlen.
Das geht aufs Haus.
Wie, was? Für Oma? Das ist ja nett, aber wie soll ich denn jetzt hier meine Dankbarkeit auch zum Ausdruck bringen, wenn mir jetzt gefallen hat, was sie hier gemacht haben?
Na, du würdest uns eine riesengroße Freude bereiten, wenn du uns bei Spotify oder iTunes oder wo auch immer du diesen Podcast hier gerade hörst, abonnierst. Wenn du immer über alles auf dem Laufenden bleiben willst, dann folge uns doch auch am besten noch bei Instagram unter @einpodcafee. Am meisten freuen wir uns aber, wenn du mit uns ins Gespräch kommst. Lass uns wissen, ob und wie dir die Folge gefallen hat. Schreib uns dafür am besten einfach bei Instagram oder per E-Mail. Unsere Kontaktdaten findest du auf www.einpodcafee.de. Und noch besser wäre es natürlich, wenn du Teil von unserer Patreon-Community werden willst, um dich da mit uns über unsere nächsten Gäste auszutauschen, selber Fragen an die Gäste zu stellen, die wir dann mit in die Folgen nehmen und so ein richtiger Teil von Einpodcafee wirst. Wie das genau geht, erfährst du entweder auf patreon.com/einpodcafee oder auf unserer Website.
Na gut, also das kann ich jetzt nicht versprechen, das war jetzt eine ganze Menge Infos hier gewesen, aber wir kicken dann mal, ja. Schönen Tag denn auch. Tschüssi.